Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. President Donald Trump tweeted that the U.S. has been talking to North Korea and paying extortion money for 25 years. Talking, he said, is not the answer. Tufts University Korea analyst Sung-Yoon Lee said Mr. Trump has a point.
It is the fact. The U.S. between 1995 and 2008, according to the Congressional Research Service, has provided North Korea with over $1.3 billion in aid, consisting mostly of food and fuel aid.
Defense Secretary Jim Mattis, meeting his South Korean counterpart, repeated that the international community is not done with diplomacy. Meanwhile, Japan said it favors a new UN Security Council resolution following this week's ballistic missile test by Pyongyang over Japan. North Korean diplomat Ju Yong-chul, however, insisted his government has a right to self-defense, warned against further sanctions or pressure on the DPRK government.
If the U.S. fails to act with discretion and persists in its reckless attempts to stifle the DPRK, we DPRK will not hesitate to take further tough countermeasures.
North Korea said Tuesday's launch was intended to counter U.S.-South Korea military exercises and contain the U.S. Pacific Island territory of Guam. Cameroonian President Paul Biya has directed a military court drop the case against three Anglophone activists. The three were arrested following last year's protest by English speakers alleging discrimination in the majority Francophone country. The three denied charges of hostility toward the state or fomenting secession and civil war. The government had been under intense diplomatic and public pressure to end its prosecution. This is VOA News. The U.S. Defense Department Wednesday acknowledged there are more U.S. troops in Afghanistan than the official level of 8,400. Dana Smith is a Pentagon spokesperson.
This is not an announcement of a troop increase. We are simply being more transparent about the way we communicate America's military commitment in Afghanistan, while still protecting sensitive information.
The Pentagon said it has about 11,000 troops in the South Asian nation. Meanwhile, the actual number of U.S. troops operating in Syria and Iraq remain under review. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu Wednesday lashed out at media coverage of twin investigations into corruption allegations, including questions about gifts he's received allegedly from Hollywood and business figures. Speaking to supporters, most Israelis, he said, appreciate our achievements despite the fact that the press lacks fairness and engages in what he called fake news, which he said has reached a peak level. A separate probe involves Mr. Netanyahu allegedly seeking favorable coverage from a media outlet he has denied the charges. Ailing Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari chaired his first cabinet meeting Wednesday in 5 months, following extended medical leave in Britain for an undisclosed condition. Mr. Buhari returned to the country August 19th. British Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson was in Maiduguri Wednesday, part of Britain's effort to support efforts against Boko Haram insurgency. Johnson focused on the need for food aid.
But what we're also trying to do with our diplomacy and with our military forces is to help turn the tide against Boko Haram, get the country back under control.
He expressed confidence Nigerian forces with British help can turn the tide against the insurgency that has killed more than 20,000 over the past 8 years. President Donald Trump turned his attention Wednesday to tax reform as a further way to boost jobs and economic growth. He spoke in Springfield, Missouri.
The foundation of our job creation agenda is to fundamentally reform our tax code for the first time in more than 30 years. I want to work with Congress, Republicans, and Democrats alike on a plan that is pro-growth, pro-jobs, pro-worker, and pro-American.
Mr. Trump hopes to get Congress to approve tax reform this year after his efforts to pass health care reform stalled. The UN has charged Venezuela's security forces with committing widespread human rights violations and crushing anti-government dissent. It warned democracy is barely alive in the South American country. U.S. government regulators have approved the first treatment that genetically engineers a patient's own immune system to fight leukemia. It's touted as the first cell therapy approved against cancer anywhere in the world. The costly and custom-made CAR-T cell treatment is developed by Novartis and the University of Pennsylvania. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, August 31st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Cameroon's president drops charges and orders the release of protest leaders.
If the release will contribute in one way or other to allay the psychosis in the two regions, and if this will help promote peace and social stability, the head of state decided to get the charges dropped and to get them released.
Issa Chiroma Bakari is Cameroon's information minister. Cameroon's main opposition leader hopes the release of protesters will pave the way for thousands of children in English-speaking regions to return to school. Meanwhile, the Cameroon government arrests TV distributors over separatist broadcasts. And clashing protests in Zimbabwe for and against First Lady Grace Mugabe.
Granting her immunity, saying political leaders can go anywhere in the world and assault people and get away with it because they have got diplomatic immunity. It depicts a negative image on all Zimbabweans.
The Zimbabwe opposition activist Linda Mastarira. Sudan and South Sudan are accused of failing to resolve the disputed Abyei question. And a Senegalese fashion designer will tell us about her year of successes. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Cameroon President Paul Biya Wednesday ordered that charges against leaders of a year-long protest be dropped and the release of those jailed. Information Minister Issa Chiroma Bakari said the president hopes the action will promote peace and stability. Cameroon's English-speaking regions have for years complained of political and economic marginalization. This culminated a year ago into widespread protests, first when lawyers in Bamenda, capital of Northwest Region, took to the streets against the alleged imposition of French courts in the Anglophone region. Teachers in both Northwest and Southwest regions also joined in the protest. A number of people were killed and about 100 arrested. Some protesters went as far as demanding secession. Chiroma Bakari says while President Biya believes in dialogue, some problems cannot be solved overnight.
The head of state, according to his rights enshrined in our constitution, is entitled and enabled by the constitution at any given time to bring to an end any judicial process in case the case has not been definitely sentenced. And in accordance with this provision in our constitution, the head of state decided to drop the charges against the three leaders in our two English-speaking regions. The reason it is simple, the head of state thinks that if the release will contribute in one way or other to allay the psychosis, the malaise in the two regions, and if this will help promote peace and social stability, the head of state decided to get the charges dropped and to get them released.
Mr. Minister, how does the president pacify concerns when the purpose of the protest was about discrimination felt by the English-speaking people in those two regions? How does that solve the problem?
I do not claim that all the problems raised by our brothers and sisters who continue to feel that they were marginalized and second-zone citizens, all the problems that they rose were solved. This is not the claim of the government. The government keeps always repeating and saying the same thing. Through dialogue, people of goodwill sitting around the table can always find the best implementable solution. But what I would like to emphasize right now is the fact that there are some problems which could not be solved overnight.
Did the president take this action because of international backlash, because of the arrest of these people?
No state in the world can champion the idea of secession. Cameroon is part and parcel of the United Nations. And no member of the United Nations at any given time can advocate or champion the ideas of secession. It is impossible. The second thing, the head of state has just one master, the people of Cameroon. He has never accepted to be intimidated or influenced by outside pressure or influence. What is at stake is our common future, is the peace in our nation. When peace and social stability command the head of state to understand and to take a such a decision without any problem. He takes the decision and the government will implement it.
Issa Chiroma Bakari is Cameroon's information minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Yaoundé. Cameroon's main opposition leader says he hopes the dropping of charges and release of protesters would pave the way for thousands of children in the country's English-speaking regions to return to school. President Paul Biya Wednesday decreed the release of the protesters to what he called pacified concerns in the various regions. But Ni John Frundi, leader of the opposition Social Democratic Front Party, condemns 9 months of imprisonment for some of the protesters. He hopes the government will not arrest those protesters still in hiding or those in exile upon their return.
The first protests were because of the teachers who complained about the educational system and the lawyers who said the legal system was too francophonized. I think he's done some cosmetic changes or taken some steps to redress the legal systems and the teachers' problems. When this is done and this to be released, I think that is well done. I'm not praising him, but I want to condemn that. In actual fact, those people have served a prison term, because 9 months in prison under inhuman conditions is not a thing that anybody will want to accept. And they kept adjourning the cases, moving forward and backwards, just to punish the people. I do hope that with what he has done, those who are on the run, those who have gone on exile, if they come back, they should not start arresting again, because that will open another front, and this might be a little more dangerous.
The issue of marginalization of the English-speaking people has been on the books now. As you said, there were some cosmetic changes that were made because of the protest. So you, as an opposition leader, how do you think that can be solved?
The SDF had proposed their own methods of solving these problems, and that was by granting the federal statutes to the different states. But instead of us going into the federal system that the SDF proposed, they talked of decentralization, which never took off, it never worked, and they used that to stifle progress in the English-speaking areas and the other marginalized areas. But now, because this delayed so much, there are some people that got very angry when they saw how children were being shot and killed in the open area. They now said they didn't want the federation again, they wanted secession. And they started crying that these boys and girls are burning the flags of the country all over, even in Bamenda here and the southwest. I said the flag being burned, American flags have been burned, French flags have been burned, British flags have been burned. So when you burn the flags, it doesn't mean that you should kill the children. So many children were shot and killed. Now they are releasing these people without trying the people that killed. And they try to come up with trumped-up charges to say, oh, they are unpatriotic, they are this and that. If students started asking for secession, it's because they've been marginalized and pushed to the wall. They've been stifled in a way that they couldn't be. So if they went to that extent, I will not blame anybody. But what I'm saying now is that we should try to see what we'll do to ease part, let things go, and we now be fighting for the others.
Mr. Frundi, thank you always for talking with us, and we do appreciate very much.
I appreciate your calls and remain blessed. I hope that we'll talk again not long from now.
Ni John Frundi is leader of Cameroon's main opposition Social Democratic Front Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Yaoundé. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, August 31st. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. Cameroon's government continues to draw a hard line on separatist groups advocating independence for the country's two English-speaking zones. Authorities arrested several local cable television distributors this week after they broadcast programming from a pro-secession media outlet. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
A Yaoundé-based cable TV distributor spent 4 days in police detention this week for airing images from the Southern Cameroon Broadcasting Corporation.
It's finally here. SCBC, the Southern Cameroon Broadcasting Corporation, the voice of the people.
The promoters of SCBC say the station is headquartered in South Africa. On Tuesday, SCBC released a message from some Cameroonians who identified themselves as being in Washington.
Hello, Southern Cameroonians. My name is Ntumfoy Oheben, and I'm coming to you all the way from Washington.
The speakers advocated for independence for the country's two English-speaking zones. The station also has been calling on schools to remain sealed until detained Anglophone leaders are released. In July, the government banned sharing messages from secessionist groups. The Yaoundé distributor said he was released this week after a warning from Cameroon's communication minister, Issa Chiruma. Several other detained distributors of SCBC also have been released. Chiruma told VOA the distributors have been warned that if they continue to relay messages from secessionist groups, all their equipment will be seized and they will answer charges in court.
This is not a joke. This is the common future of our nation. What is at stake here for us to be Cameroonian here? You cannot joke with this.
The crisis began in November when English-speaking lawyers and teachers went on strike, demanding reforms. But the movement was quickly overtaken by separatist groups calling for the total independence for Cameroon's two English-speaking regions. Cameroon is officially a bilingual country, but English speakers are a minority. Anglophone activists say English speakers have been marginalized. Following violent unrest in December, authorities cut all internet access to the affected zones for 3 months. At least 30 media organizations either have been suspended or sealed over their coverage of the strike, and 8 journalists are behind bars at the Kondinge prison in the capital. They are accused of broadcasting information that can lead to social unrest. Dennis Kwemo is president of the National Trade Union of Cameroon Journalists. He said the arrest infringed on press freedom.
We have reminded our colleagues that they should abide by the ethics of our profession. We have engaged our members to act in solidarity. We have asked for the release of our colleagues who are arrested in the Southwest and the Northwest and are currently detained.
But Peter Isoka, president of the National Communication Council, says the government stands firm.
The journalist is the watchdog of society. And if the watchdog gives wrong signals, I tell you, you'll run the country into chaos.
This year, two media rights groups, Freedom House and Reporters Without Borders, each downgraded Cameroon's rating in their annual Global Press Freedom Indices. Freedom House has assigned Cameroon the state of not free. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
There were dueling demonstrations in Zimbabwe's capital on Wednesday for and against First Lady Grace Mugabe. Sebastian Mofu reports from Harare.
Members of the ruling ZANU-PF party marched in Harare, chanting songs to show support for First Lady Grace Mugabe. They held placards written, "Gabriella Angels is not an angel." Angels is a South African model who accused Mugabe of assaulting her with an electrical cord 2 weeks ago at a Johannesburg hotel. The First Lady was expected at the march, but senior ZANU-PF official Mandita Wepi Chimene said she had other commitments. Chimene says, "We cannot afford her to sleep outside her home. We have come here for our father and our mother," referring to longtime President Robert Mugabe and his wife. Chimene says, "There's no way we are going to respect our father and ignore our mother." That statement is an apparent reference to ongoing rivalry within the ZANU-PF. One faction supports Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa to succeed Robert Mugabe, while another is backing Grace Mugabe to succeed her husband, who has ruled Zimbabwe since 1980. The First Lady has not spoken publicly since she returned from South Africa. Meanwhile, in South Africa, Angels has filed a court challenge to Grace Mugabe's diplomatic immunity. She had traveled to South Africa for medical treatment, not official business. On Wednesday, as the ruling ZANU-PF party merged, a coalition of Zimbabwean opposition parties rallied outside the South African embassy in Harare to protest Pretoria's handling of the alleged assault case. Opposition activist Linda Masarira.
Granting her immunity, saying political leaders can go anywhere in the world and assault people and get away with it because they have got diplomatic immunity. It depicts a negative image on all Zimbabweans.
South Africa's main opposition party, the Democratic Alliance, last week filed papers with the nation's constitutional court seeking the court to reject the decision to grant diplomatic immunity to Mugabe. In a statement, the party said the move was caught wholly without legal merit and should thus be declared unconstitutional and invalid, unquote. No hearing date has been set for the case, but it could further strain Harare-Pretoria relations. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
A group of lawyers from the disputed Abyei region says the governments of Sudan and South Sudan have failed to resolve Abyei's final status. The region is claimed by both countries. The group, calling itself the Abyei Lawyers Network for Final Status, says it will talk to the political leaders and other stakeholders in both countries to expedite resolution of the area's final status. Michael Atit has this report from Juba.
Moinluaka Lorqual, who heads the newly established Abyei Lawyers Group, says the governments of Sudan and South Sudan, as well as the African Union, have neglected to acknowledge the plight of the Abyei people who continue to suffer because they have few basic services and little local infrastructure.
The increasing scale of the people's suffering and growing complexity of the crisis caused by neglect and failure to honor widely witnessed agreements and government commitments have resulted in rising demand for action.
The Abyei Protocol, which is part of the 2005 Comprehensive Peace Agreement that ended war between Southern Sudan and Khartoum government, gave the people living in the nine Ngok Dinka chiefdoms an opportunity to decide in a referendum whether they wanted to belong to South Sudan or Sudan. The referendum was supposed to take place on January 9, 2011, the same day the people of Southern Sudan voted to separate from the rest of the Sudan. But the governments of Sudan and South Sudan were unable to agree on who was eligible to vote. The referendum was not held in 2011, in part because South Sudan rejected the inclusion of the nomadic Mesoria Arab tribe in referendum. In October 2013, the Ngok Dinka people of Abyei conducted a unilateral referendum and voted overwhelmingly to join South Sudan. But neither government of Sudan nor South Sudan has recognized those results. Moinluak says the right of Abyei people must be respected.
Our people have united with their fellow South Sudanese generations and positively engaged the world to support their legitimate goals. Eventually, Abyei was defined by the concerned parties, both in Abyei Protocol of 2005 and the Abyei Arbitration of 2009, as, I quote, the area of the nine Ngok Dinka chiefdoms transferred to Kordofan in 1905, unquote.
Moinluak says, despite the presence of United Nations Interim Security Forces in Abyei, referred to as UNISFOR forces, violence and instability remain rampant in the area. Akunan Ajuang, a Ngok Dinka traditional chief, says Abyei has been unstable since British colonialists transferred the area to Kordofan in what was then northern Sudan for what was hoped would be a smoother administration more than 100 years ago. On May 15 this year, the UN Security Council extended UNISFOR's mandate until November 15. The Council also demanded that Sudan and South Sudan urgently begin to form the Abyei Area Administration and Council. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
Senegalese designer Sarah Diouf says she's having a successful first year or so in the business. She manufactures all of her clothing and bags for her line Tongoro from Dakar. One of her bags, the Umburu bag, has reached international acclaim. Duve says French fashion house Saint Laurent Paris swiped her design for this particularly long and thin bag for his fall 2017 collection. Duve currently has a case in the French courts against the fashion house. She talked to Ricky Stryak about the case.
It's been incredible because when I first started coming back and forth to Dakar just to test some tailors. I brought some of the design with me in Paris. And during Fashion Week, I met one of this editor. She noticed what I was wearing and just how I decided to make a business out of it to create the line and sell it abroad because I feel like the Made in Africa back then wasn't fully established as it is right now.
What I think is kind of cool about your line, especially while WAC is great, you definitely go for your own look and a modern look.
Absolutely. I think it's important for us to break the chains and break boxes because when you see a design, you don't have to, if you're an African designer, you don't have to automatically go for WAC and that kind of fabric. You can definitely create something that is like universal and reach out to more global scene, if I can say it. But I still make sure that every design and every print has some kind of reminder of a rhythm, culture, or something that is partly African.
What kind of fabrics do you use? Where do you source your fabrics?
I source everything here in Dakar. So I go to the market, and when I fall on the fabric that I really like, I usually buy the whole piece. And to me, it's very important to even source the fabric here, even if they come from, I don't know, sometimes Italy. It's just that it's a way to make the people that sell, it's an income for them, and it's an income that stays in the country, and it's very important.
And my last question is going to be about the Umburu bag that Yves Saint Laurent, the designers, stole your design. Can you tell me a little bit about that and about how the status of that, the copyright, how your designs work with copyright?
I designed this bag about 2 years ago when we first started communicating on Tungo, and it's very unfortunate, you know, that such big brands can go get away with that, but. Fortunately for me, I copyrighted the bag, and we'll just see how it goes. I cannot really discuss the whole process right now because it's not open yet, but we'll just see how it goes, and hopefully crossing fingers that the law gives us the right to, you know, reclaim my property.
Is the case going on in France?
Yes, absolutely.
That was Sarah Duff, owner and designer of Tongoro Fashion Line. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Cameroon President Paul Biya Wednesday ordered that charges against leaders of a year-long protest be dropped and the release of those jailed. Information Minister Issa Chiruma Bakari said the president hopes the action will promote peace and stability. That is it for this Thursday, August 31st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Botte wishing you a good day.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.
Savor the flavor of African music. I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.